question asked by Maximus in a moment of freedom and confidence. Balbinus answered it without hesitation. The love of the Senate, of the people, and of all mankind. Alas, replied his more penetrating colleague, alas, I dread the hatred of the soldiers, and the fatal effects of their resentment. His apprehensions were but too well justified by the event. Whilst Maximus was preparing to defend Italy against the common foe, Balbinus, who remained at Rome, had been engaged in scenes of blood and intestine discord. Distrust and jealousy reigned in the Senate, and even in the temples where they assembled, every senator carried either open or concealed arms. After the tyrant's death, his formidable army had acknowledged, from necessity rather than from choice, the authority of Maximus, who transported himself without delay to the camp before Aquileia. As soon as he had received their oath of fidelity, he addressed them in terms full of mildness and moderation, lamented rather than arraigned the wild disorders of the times, and assured the soldiers that of all their past conduct, the Senate would remember only their generous desertion of the tyrant and their voluntary return to their duty. Maximus enforced his exhortations by a liberal donative, purified the camp by a solemn sacrifice of expiation, and then dismissed the legions to their several provinces, impressed, as he hoped, with a lively sense of gratitude and obedience. But nothing could reconcile the haughty spirit of the Praetorians. They attended the emperors on the memorable day of their public entry into Rome, but amidst the general acclamations, the sullen, dejected countenance of the guards sufficiently declared that they considered themselves as the object rather than the partners of the triumph. When the whole body was united in their camp, those who had served under Maximin and those who had remained at Rome insensibly communicated to each other their complaints and apprehensions. The emperors chosen by the army had perished with ignominy. Those elected by the Senate were seated on the throne. The long discord between the civil and military powers was decided by a war in which the former had obtained a complete victory. The soldiers must now learn a new doctrine of submission to the Senate, and whatever clemency was affected by that politic assembly, they dreaded a slow revenge. The whole city was employed in the Capitoline Games, and the emperors were left almost alone in the palace. On a sudden, they were alarmed by the approach of a troop of desperate assassins. Ignorant of each other's situation or designs, for they already occupied very distant apartments, afraid to give or to receive assistance, they wasted the important moments in idle debates and fruitless recriminations. The arrival of the guards put an end to the vain strife. They seized on these emperors of the Senate, for such they called them with malicious contempt, stripped them of their garments, and dragged them in insolent triumph through the streets of Rome with the design of inflicting a slow and cruel death on those unfortunate princes. The fear of a rescue from the faithful Germans of the imperial guards shortened their tortures, and their bodies, mangled with a thousand wounds, were left exposed to the insults or to the pity of the populace. In the space of a few months, six princes had been cut off by the sword. Gordian, who had already received the title of Caesar, was the only person that occurred to the soldiers as proper to fill the vacant throne. They carried him to the camp and unanimously saluted him, Augustus and Emperor.
But the young Gordian III lasted only 6 years as emperor. At the age of 19, in AD 244, he was murdered by the Praetorian guards, who acclaimed Philip emperor. Philip was Praetorian prefect to Gordian III. Philip gave the public what it sought: games.
The magnificence of Philip's shows and entertainments dazzled the eyes of the multitude. The devout were employed in the rites of superstition, whilst the reflecting few revolved in their anxious minds the past history and the future fate of the empire. Since Romulus, with a small band of shepherds and outlaws, fortified himself on the hills near the Tiber, 10 centuries had already elapsed. During the first 4 ages, the Romans, in the laborious school of poverty, had acquired the virtues of war and government. By the vigorous exertion of those virtues, and by the assistance of fortune, they had obtained, in the course of 3 succeeding centuries, an absolute empire over many countries of Europe, Asia, and Africa. The last 300 years had been